Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm Frankie Oliver, your host and founder of New Society. And today I'm joined by PR Week Editor-in-Chief Danny Rogers. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Frankie.
And our special guest, Lisa Merrick-Lawless, who's the co-founder of Purpose Disruptors. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, lovely to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. We've been wanting to have you on the show for a long time now. So for our listeners, to just remind you of what Purpose Disruptors is, if you didn't know, is a fantastic nonprofit that launched in 2019 to help the advertising and communications industry transition towards halving emissions by 2030 in line with the Paris Treaty. Lisa herself has over 20 years of experience of working in marketing, advertising and communications, and has held leadership positions both client side and agency side, working for brands such as Coca-Cola, Tetley, Strongbow, Unilever, Greenpeace, WWF and Innocent. Lisa delivered a fantastic speech at Cannes last year, and we thought it an important time to get her onto the show to learn more about Purpose Disruptors and what its work could also mean for the PR industry and its role in addressing the climate emergency. So Lisa, kicking off, I'm going to give a little bit of an explanation, but could you tell us a bit about Purpose Disruptors and also the story of how you came to co-found it?
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Frankie. So I guess I was busy working in the industry like many of your listeners, or doing something I've been doing for sort of 20 years. It's a fun, interesting sort of creative industry. And the catalyst really was being asked to work on something that I really didn't want to work on. And I'd had a nagging feeling for a while that this was not the work in the world that I necessarily felt was serving, you know, a bigger purpose or something that I was sort of drawn towards. And then I think it was just from there, really, that was a hard no for me. And so I think when one thing closes like that, other things open. And I found that really everything kind of opened up in front of me at the time in 2018. You know, there was rising sort of awareness of the climate crisis, you know, Greta and the student strikes. My own daughter went on her first climate strike. She was about 11. I think it kind of reminded me of probably who I was when I was her age, you know, which was somebody who cared a lot about the environment, you know, grew up in the countryside, campaigned for Greenpeace, et cetera, et cetera. And I felt a lot of tension between what I was now doing and what was needed in the world. Left my job, did a course called Reclaiming Agency, which is run by my fellow co-founder, Jonathan Wise, which was life-changing. Went back to Cambridge University, did a course in sustainability. And then the three of us, myself, Jonathan Wise and Rob McFall, who at the time was at Mindshare, decided to start a pub night, really just sort of bringing people to the pub to talk about the tension they might be feeling if they work in you know, advertising and communications, driving consumption when we know that's making the climate crisis worse. And like, we didn't really have any answers, just questions. Like, what do you do about that?
And did you organise yourselves in the pub? I mean, it's quite interesting to sort of, let's all get in the pub and talk about climate change. Like, how did it then go from that to actually being a properly well-funded philanthropic organisation?
Yeah.
That's obviously well-structured and obviously has a team of 8 people now, which is great.
All of those, that is true. Well-structured, I would question, potentially. but let's go with that for the purpose of this. So we went from sort of 20 people in a pub in 2018 to like 2,000 people supporting us at COP26 when we launched our Good Life 2030 project. And I think that shows the sort of level of tension in the industry and the appetite for change and the number of people who want to be sort of part of this movement. And it was really us just looking around, wondering who was going to pick up the baton and say something or do something. And it was, yeah, like tumbleweed.
It's a very weird experience also working in climate when you look around yourself and you think, surely somebody else is doing this.
Yeah.
And there's that phrase, isn't there, that the biggest enemy of the climate change is thinking that somebody else is sorting it out.
Absolutely.
And actually then you realise that actually, no, you do need to step up into this moment.
Yeah.
And it's quite an extraordinary feeling, that, isn't it?
It is, and that's exactly what we did. We had no, we run events before, we didn't really know what we were doing. We had no funding. We were all doing other jobs at the same time. But decided that we should run a climate crisis summit. So we booked the Royal Institution and we got 100 of the most senior people we could find through our network in a room and talked about the climate emergency. And then from there, really, the plan was to run more climate crisis summits in different agencies. We were asked to do one at WPP. And interestingly, obviously, they paid us for that, and we didn't have a bank account because we weren't really a business. And so from there, we set up, you know, as a kind of not-for-profit organization. We were very lucky to be approached by a very forward-thinking funder who said, I see what you're doing and I want to give you some money to continue this
Tremendous.
Work. Yeah.
So rolling forward then, we're here now in 2023, and it looks quite structured. You know, you've got sort of 5 pillars of the work that you're doing. Do you think you could just run through what those are?
Yeah, of course. So I guess our vision is an advertising industry transformed, like, in service of a thriving future. So we are working kind of inside the industry, trying to sort of mobilise change from the inside. We've got 5 pillars of work. So one is community. And I guess that sits at the heart of everything we do. We started in a pub. We still run pub nights every month. It's about building a network, connecting people, helping people have difficult conversations around climate, and building that sort of momentum. So community, leadership. So we run leadership training, both at a sort of individual level through Reclaiming Agency and at an agency level through some of the programs that we conduct. And I guess that is really about bringing together leadership teams, you know, around a sort of a common, you know, challenge, and looking at how you might sort of think about that differently. We have an education pillar. So that's our Change the Brief Alliance education platform that's been going for 3 years now. All 5 of the 6 big network groups are members. I think there's about 5,000 people on it. And that's very much about, you know, everything from climate 101 to going deep on everything from food to fashion to energy to transport. So it's a really amazing place to sort of learn the basics of how you communicate around sustainability. Measurement, it's our 4th pillar. So that's our advertised emissions methodology, which is all about sort of responsibility and transparency. So how do we measure the kind of full emissions of our work? And then our final pillar is around creativity, and that's our Good Life 2030 project. And that's really all about imagination and futures thinking, looking at visions of the future held by UK citizens and those in the industry.
So there's so much in there, so many pieces to unpick, and we'll come and talk about advertised emissions later. But it's probably worth just picking out a couple of things there, which is the Good Life Project, to really help our listeners understand that, which I think is very much about kind of lifting people's heads to sort of, you know, when we talk about climate, people are thinking about doom and gloom, and it's all about loss. And actually, if we do what we need to do to address the climate crisis and shift to a well-being led economy, for example, we have the opportunity to actually create a much better world. And that's a narrative that isn't necessarily coming through, and I think is one that you are very much working with the advertising agency to unable to happen?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think when we set up this project, as we were kind of in the year of sort of COP26 being held in the UK, and our question was really, what's the most helpful thing we can do in this moment? And when we were working quite closely with the Race to Zero team at the UNFCCC, and there were lots of goals and science and graphs and projections and all of this kind of stuff. But what we realized was, when you think about halving emissions by 2030, like, what is that? Like, what does it look like? What could it be like? And where are the visions of that? They were sort of missing, I think. And so we realized in doing lots of our work, there were either really fantastical visions, like utopia, that people don't believe, or dystopian visions that people just look away from. So the origins of that project was really, what do UK citizens really dream of when it comes to 2030? Like, what is a good life for them? And so we did some deep qual research with them to look at what they talk about when they think about 2030. And it was really clear, you know, they talk a lot about, you know, dreaming of more connection to themselves and the things that they love, more connection to others, time in community, time with friends and family, and more connection to nature. And so we sort of used those insights, if you like, in working with citizens and created, you know, a whole sort of project around that, which has a really kind of strong creative brief at the heart of it.
So, Lisa, amazingly, we've never met before, but it's lovely, lovely to meet you. So thank you for coming on PR Week's podcast. So imagine I'm an agency worker in either a PR agency or an advertising agency. What is it you'd like me to do differently? How can I act differently through my work to achieve the ends that you think would be admirable?
That's a very good question. I mean, I think for me, it all starts by looking inward, you know, so the question I would, you know, ask you is, you know, this is sort of role playing, you sit in an agency, what's in your gift? You know, I think the question we should start with is, where can we start close in? What is it we feel we're called to do? And how do we go about making that happen? And a lot of that is about connecting people with other people who are already doing it. And that's a lot of what we do is try and help people understand that they're not alone. And a lot of people are feeling this way and are starting by changing, you know, could be small things close in at work, or it could just be opening up conversations. It could be putting climate on the agenda constantly. It could be putting it on the briefs. It could be having open conversations with clients about it. But I think that's where you start.
Obviously, if an agency worker, I mean, their main impact, I guess, is through the work they create for client companies. So it's the campaigns they produce. So should I, as an agency worker, be giving different advice to the clients on the campaigns they run? Should I be advising clients on getting their company to behave differently? Should my output be different to make a positive impact on climate change?
Yeah, so probably all of those things. So I think, you know, if you are in an agency kind of right now and you're thinking about what you could do, I would say part of it is the work that you're creating. So educating yourself through things like, you know, Change the Brief platform, but also there's courses at Cambridge. There's lots of different resources available now. So educate and upskill yourself so that you understand the fundamental kind of science of the, you know, behind climate change. And you also understand what are useful and not useful kind of frames and messages and narratives and stories around this. So, you know, part of what we do as communicators is understanding, you know, how we can be, you know, most helpful and tell the stories that are going to lead us in the right direction. So I think part of it, as you say, is about the work, whether that's, you know, PR and stories or whether that's design, you know, whatever it is that you're doing. I think another part is really understanding that you have agency. So this sort of master-servant relationship with clients is not that helpful in kind of moving us forward. And so there's an element of understanding your own kind of power and agency in what you do. So I can say, you know, hand on heart, as somebody who was client-side, you know, for 10 years, you know, I paid my agencies to tell me something different I didn't already know, and to come up with, you know, new ideas, to push me, to provide thought leadership, to bring in kind of new and fresh insights. And so that's in your gift. If you work, you know, within an agency, that's what clients are looking, you know, for you to do. And then I think there's the internal question of sort of, you know, finding your people, like within your agency or within your network group, you know, finding a group of people. Sometimes that's formally through a sort of green group or a sustainability group. You know, a lot more agencies now have head of sustainability, which is excellent progress. But even if your agency doesn't have that, you know, come to the pub night, you know, you'll meet other people to start with, but also just forming sort of community and networks within your agency and looking at the things that you can change from where you stand.
Brilliant. I think what you've said will have a lot of resonance for a lot of our listeners. How do you feel you've done so far on some of those metrics? Do you feel you've changed behaviour of agencies so far, and where do you think you can do more?
That's a really good question. I think we're doing well. I think momentum is building within the industry. We're definitely not the only people doing it. I think it's a community of people, you know, doing this work, and we're definitely, you know, standing on the shoulders, I would say, of people outside of the industry. So, for instance, the Good Life 2030 project, you know, really the inspiration came from Transition Towns and Rob Hopkins' work. Advertised emissions came from financed emissions. So I don't think we are reinventing the wheel, but what we are doing is bringing it into our industry where it isn't currently. We are changing behaviour. We see people making progress, you know, and we're just conveners and facilitators, just to be really clear. You know, we are providing the spaces, the tools, the resources, the interventions. It's really up to the people who get involved in this to make the change happen, you know, and there are some phenomenal people in our industry really, really pushing the change. So, you know, they do the hard work in some ways. And so, you know, you're trying to change the system whilst you're inside it, you know, and that is hard to do, so it's exhausting work, I'm not going to lie about that, but at the same time, you know, it's also energizing. You know, we're trying to create and build the future in the present. The biggest challenge is probably the speed and scale at which change is required. Like, we need a complete paradigm shift, and it can be really frustrating when you see lots of tweaks happening to the existing system when really what we need is a total overhaul.
So you were at Cannes last year, Lisa, and I was lucky enough to go to Cannes Lion this year. And there was a definite message at Cannes this year to focus more on campaigns that were about commercial creativity rather than, in inverted commas, purpose campaigns. And yet there seems to me a bit of a tension in that, because I think your work, Lisa, is trying to encourage agency workers to be more purposeful in everything they do. So I'm just wondering, what do you think, Frankie? Is there a tension there?
Well, it's interesting. I think the cost of living crisis has had a massive impact on briefs. And if you think about Cannes last year, you know, I was so excited when you came back and Greenpeace had been there and Clean Creators were there and Lisa was on the stage. And it felt like we were like, yay, like there's movement happening here. And then the cost of living crisis strikes, purpose briefs aren't coming through. It seems to have died down. Greenpeace didn't turn up, and it's now like, let's just do commercial briefs. And then we're also now in a place where we're questioning whether we should be driving economic growth and all of those sorts of things. So, Lisa, it's like, I don't envy you. It's a really massive task, this paradigm shift, isn't it? And what the advertising industry is there to actually do.
I mean, that's probably the fundamental question, Frankie, at the heart of it, isn't it? Like, what is the purpose of the advertising industry? And I think what we see.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Is that, you know, advertising, communications, PR, media, we sit at a unique position within the system. So, you know, we're architects of desire. You know, we shape society, we create culture. And to date, really, over the last 100 years, we've created a version of a good life that's based on more and more consumption, status, wealth, you know, individualism. And really, we can create a different one. And I think we've all got to ask the question about, you know, what is being asked of us? What are we called to do at this moment in time? And I think it makes me think of the quote by David Graeber, which is, you know, the ultimate hidden truth of the world is that it's something that we make and could just as easily make differently. And so we've got to ask the question, like, who does it serve to keep recreating it in the same mold? Like, who is this actually working for? Because it's definitely not working for future generations. It's definitely not working for the global south. It's definitely not working for a lot of people. And you mentioned the cost of living crisis, and that's, you know, the intersectionality of that and climate, you know, can't be ignored. You know, they're part of the same thing. It's part of the same, you know, structural issues that we're kind of dealing with here. So, you know, I think it's a real misstep for the leaders at Cannes Lions to think that they can just decide that they're a bit like bored of purpose or a bit done with climate. I don't think
it felt a bit like that from my perspective.
I don't think that's going to end well for them, actually. I mean, yes, people are always going to go to Cannes and drink rosé and hang out on yachts and, you know, whatever. But there is a new generation, you know, coming through, and there is a massive talent drain from our industry. And that's why people don't want to work in an industry that is which only purpose is to sell people shit they don't need. So I think it's a really interesting moment in time.
I was just going to add to that as well, thinking about the Good Life Project and also the client base that people, you know, advertising agencies and marketing communications agencies are supporting. I mean, you could arguably say airlines and fossil fuel companies could create a whole campaign around, we're part of the solution and we can make the good life, right? And actually then we get into the quagmire of greenwashing and so forth. So Lisa, I think the nub of the question here really is, what sorts of clients should and should we not be working with at this moment in time?
Yeah, I mean, that is the million-dollar question, isn't it? We get asked that by agencies all of the time. And I think it's a common question within the sort of climate transition we're in. People are trying to work it out and trying to feel their way. And we know, for instance, within the music industry, you know, similar questions are being asked. You know, we did some work with Brian Eno and kind of Earth Percent, you know, and they have a whole collection of musicians, you know, trying to work out, like, do I want my music used for an airline ad, for instance? And so they're trying to look at which sectors and brands should they lend their music to. And we're trying to develop something that will help our industry sort of untangle that. So off the back of the advertised emissions work, we're developing something called the Advertiser Carbon Index. And that will work a little bit like the Interbrand Top 100 that ranks 100 UK spenders based on strategy and action to reducing consumption-based emissions. And that's going to launch in Q4 this year and will enable people to see, look at potential new clients, look at their client portfolio and work out the kind of red, amber, green within that. So yeah, that's something we're working towards.
So obviously on a practical level, you know, there's still a lot of big PR agencies who do work for fossil fuel clients, and those agencies argue that they're working for them because they're helping them transition towards a better future. And those examples include WPP agencies, which works for Shell, Edelman, which works for Shell, has worked in Exxon in the past, and there's some debate about whether it still does. But how do What should workers of those sort of companies do? And should they campaign simply to not work for these businesses?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think what WPP and Edelman should do is ask their employees, you know, it should be democratic. You know, do the people who are being asked to work on these briefs, who have mortgages to pay, et cetera, like, do they want to do that work? And that would be a really good first step, I think. I think the other thing to think about is, you know, it's very easy now. There are very clear guidelines around greenwashing and around whether both the commitments and the action of a company, whether that's fossil fuel or otherwise, are in line with their marketing spend and what they're saying in their communications. So it's very easy to work out whether they are walking the walk or whether it is all actually just talk. And I think decisions can be made, you know, quite easily based on that.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of, you know, advertising campaigns, even from banks, not just fossil fuel companies, who are now in hot water with the ASA.
Exactly.
Because they are saying, we are part of the solution. You know, we know with fossil fuel companies, they're spending less than 1% of CapEx on renewable energy.
Yeah.
So the idea that they are part of the solution is possibly not true. And I think if you're using that as your benchmark around the work you should and shouldn't be doing, that's probably easier to navigate.
Yeah, very true. It's just difficult, isn't it? If you're an agency executive and that's the line that you're employer is taking, you know, how much of a line in the sand are you prepared to draw?
I think it's really hard with big agency groups. I think, you know, we've seen lots of independent agencies signing the Clean Creatives manifesto and commitment to not work with fossil fuel companies. But in those big agency groups, I mean, we just saw the Shell brief was up for pitch, wasn't it, across lots of media agencies recently. And Duncan Meisel was out there on LinkedIn saying, do not pitch. And I think as an individual, it's really hard, isn't it, when you're being expected by your agency bosses and your big potentially corporate owners to respond to that brief, which is, to your point, Lisa, about the strength of the employee feeling being really important in this decision-making process. Where if they look back now and they were thinking, well, we're going to take a brief from a tobacco company, I mean, they know what the answer would be. But because there's a grey area right now, they need to really understand the strength of feeling from their employees.
Yeah, exactly. I think the tobacco comparison is a really helpful one. You know, you wouldn't be expected in this day and age to go into an agency and then be put on a tobacco brand without being kind of aware that's what you're going in to do. And I think sometimes people are in agencies and then moved around on different clients. But, you know, I think, like we've explored, you know, these agencies need to be asking themselves, you know, what kind of future they want to be part of, you know. And when you start thinking in a more long-term way, the question really is about, you know, how do we become good ancestors? And so if I was, you know, a kind of CEO of one of these agencies right now, that's what I would be asking myself. And I think that's probably what their children are asking them over the dinner table.
But these agency bosses, to be clear, they argue that they're not doing anything wrong, that they are helping Shell transition to renewable energy and that they have to do it by working with them. So I'm not sure it's a black and white decision.
But that's not true, is it? I think that's the problem. They're using that as a narrative. They are masters of their own PR. I mean, effectively, Shell's going to be in court soon. You know, oil companies are in or out of Congress hearings at the moment. You know, the facts are there about the misinformation that's definitely happened, and also the fact that most of them are not reaching science-based targets to meet the Paris Treaty.
Exactly.
So that's the problem. Like, it doesn't stack up.
Yeah. Follow the facts, follow the science, have a look at what Client Earth is saying, look at the kind of legal systems, look at what the ASA is saying, you know, and base your judgments on that. I think you're exactly right, Frankie.
And so your list that you will draw up on, you know, admirable climate friendly companies to work for, you say it's not just fossil fuel companies. It also includes, well, airlines. What other sorts of businesses should agency workers be seriously considering working on?
I mean, again, it's not like our approach is not to tell people what to do, just to be really clear. So it won't be a list that says you should and shouldn't do this. What people are asking for is guidance based on the science and based on the facts. And so what we're doing is just pulling together data that's widely available for anyone really to look at, so that people can make really informed choices based on the facts. And so if you look at the facts and you look at the data, you know, it's really clear that there are some high carbon industries that include fossil fuels, that include airlines, that include meat, you know, and others. And you'd have to be, I mean, these are smart people who work in our industry. You know, they read the papers, like they know this stuff. And so it will be based on that, really.
So, Lisa, moving on from that, really, I think one of the biggest questions that's also going on in a raging debate in the industry right now is all around advertised emissions. Could you explain landscape a little bit about what you're hoping to achieve with advertised emissions as part of Scope 3 and what the current debate is about?
So advertised emissions is something that we launched again at COP26, so a couple of years ago now. And really, at the heart of it, it is about choice and responsibility. So how do we as an industry take full responsibility for the emissions that we create? And if we are to take full responsibility for those, what is it that we measure? And so advertised emissions is based on the idea of financed emissions, which has been around for a while in the finance industry. And it offers really an idea and a methodology to help the advertising industry measure and reduce the climate impact resulting from the uplift in sales generated by advertising. So this is different to the operational and production emissions generated by, for instance, you know, running a shoot or running a building, which are relatively small. When you think about what you're actually generating in terms of sales and what that's doing in terms of uplift, in terms of what's on the poster or what's in the, you know, ad, that's an entirely different, you know, kind of level of responsibility. And so the Landmark report calculated that advertising is responsible for an uplift in 32% of everyone in the UK's carbon footprint. And really, it provides a framework for the industry. So as the architects of desire, we can transition from promoting high carbon brands to low carbon alternatives and accelerate a societal shift towards a sustainable future. It's recognised by the UN, kind of Race to Zero, and is starting to be kind of implemented within kind of agencies and agency groups.
Now, as part of sustainability reporting?
Yes. So what's interesting is if you do like ESG reporting and you are looking at kind of your operational footprint and you are an ad agency or a PR agency, you probably look pretty good on paper because your emissions are like you don't produce anything. We're a service industry, right? So that's not the right thing to measure because that's not at the heart of what we do. So that's, you know, just measuring your, you know, I don't know, whether you use renewable energy in your office or not. It's not really associated with the industry that we work in that drives consumption. And so that's where we're trying to shift the level of responsibility around emissions to look at kind of consumption-related emissions, which you know, we have to reduce in order to hit the targets.
So what's the big debate about?
So the big debate is interestingly probably not about the right thing. So the point of advertised emissions is really to open up discussion and debate. So the methodology is open, everything is open source, the working groups are compiled of people from across the industry sort of co-creating and co-designing the methodology. No methodology is perfect, and this is definitely not perfect. But the challenge that came last week in an article in Campaign was around the methodology, and there was a claim in that article that it is problematic to say that advertising drives consumption. Now, we have had probably the most amount of emails and messages we've ever had since we set up 3 years ago based on that article. So I'm not sure if that was the intended purpose by the AA and ISBA and the IPA, but that is what's happened is people are pretty outraged by those claims and have come to us to say, sorry, what? We don't drive consumption. That's the entire point of the industry. Now, they do have a point. So within the article, they talk about, you know, switching. Obviously, you know, there is an element of switching and that's not accounted for within the methodology. And that's always, we've always been very open about that. But I think the fact that you have the industry bodies really trying to talk about how, you know, advertising doesn't grow consumption and growth when their own work, you know, their kind of ad pays one work talks about how you put £1 in and you get £6 worth of value out and we drive the economy. So when you look back at their own work, you know, actually it's very clear, you know, that advertising does drive consumption.
But of course, the problem there is that if advertising drives consumption, you're effectively telling people that they need to reduce consumption, you're pretty much telling them to change career, aren't you?
I mean, some do. Yeah, some do. For some, the cognitive dissonance between, you know, working in this industry and loving creative problem solving and making creative work, whilst also holding to be true that if you drive, you know, endless consumption, we already need three planets to live on. You know, we're kind of all out of resources. And so, you know, there is a mass exodus from our industry. I don't think we can ignore that. There is a huge talent drain for many reasons, but this is a really, really big one. People are questioning, you know, how they want to use their talents. But I think for a lot of people, you know, in the industry, there are also, you know, other sectors, other brands, other clients coming through. You know, there is a big switch towards more, you know, sustainable lifestyles and sustainable brands. And so, you know, people are starting to kind of move towards and wanting to work on that kind of work.
And I think it's with that paradigm shift, isn't it? Like once you've made the decision and you've closed one door, it is totally possible to build a new door, right? And open a new door to a whole new set of clients and potentially a slightly different business model.
Yeah.
It's totally possible. But again, you're trying to push that Berlin Wall over and there's resistance and possibly a really faulty argument about what advertising actually does, which probably has had a few jaws hit the floor, I would have thought, in the industry. So I can't bear it, but we've run out of time. Because like this conversation is massive and there's so much that I'm sure that we want to dig into, not least, you know, really how PR agencies can respond to this, how they can also look at their own advertised emissions. But I presume your door is open and you're ready to speak to any agency that wants to speak to you, Lisa. So I suppose we'll open that invitation up to the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, advertised emissions is potentially more tricky. At the moment, it's based on paid media. And so that's more difficult to measure within PR, I know. You know, Change the Brief Alliance is an open education platform that works for anybody working in communications. So I would say if people are looking for somewhere to start, you know, a first next step, you know, then maybe that's a good place, you know, to look. If they're looking for, you know, other people in the industry that they want to talk to or network with, you know, then come along to, you know, our pub nights and have a look on the website for all the updates and resources, which is just purposedisruptors.org.
Fantastic. I think that is such an important first step, isn't it? Just get there and get talking and meet the people that are there already. So Lisa, thank you so much for making the time to come and talk to us. We'll obviously be following this debate through the industry and, you know, very much encourage everybody within the industry to get involved too. So thank you so much. And to all our listeners, we hope that you've enjoyed this show and we look forward to you joining us next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.